Welcome back. 10 o'clock hour on WTMJ. I'm, of course, Steve, as at least that's what the big voice guy says. Joining us, it's kind of a regular feature we like to do, President Mike Lovell, Marquette University.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Happy summer to you.
Yeah, happy summer to you, too.
And our special guest today, he always brings a special guest, Dr. Kent Belasco, Director of Marquette's Commercial Banking Program, Associate Professor of Finance. Welcome, sir.
Happy to be here.
Thank you. All this consternation, we've seen inflation, recession talk, interest rates rising, cost of everything going up. As somebody who has been a certified accountant, financial planner for decades, let's talk about some of that. How people are managing their finances versus when you first started in the field.
When I first started, one of the things, I go back a number of years when IRAs first came on the market, and there was a lot of hype about that, and interest rates were actually very high, so people could put away money and become a millionaire, and that was the plan. Things changed since then, especially in the last 15 years, and one of the things that I think is a problem is people don't save enough money, and they don't understand enough about financial planning to really do that, and that's where you get into financial and economic literacy.
That begs the question. So whether it's teaching them those skills, is that a parental obligation? Should we be teaching our kids some responsibility with their banking accounts, their checking accounts, whatever, or an allowance? Where does the fault lie there?
I think it's a little bit of both. We don't talk about this much in the grade schools or the high schools. And by the time they get to college, sure, they're learning finance and they're learning corporate type levels of finance, but they're not getting into personal financial planning. So they don't understand necessarily that, when you get a paycheck, you're not going to get it all. Tax is going to be taken out. So you have to plan cash flow and you have to think that way. Most people don't. And therein lies the problem. The other side is the economy. We've gone through 15 years of upheaval and a lot of people still don't understand what the Fed does and why these things are happening. And what I read in the paper is a lot of people are not prepared for retirement.
You talked about the inability of people to save. Part of it's inflation. Part of it's a different way of thinking about their finances. The other worrisome sign is that credit card debt has spiked to a record $1 trillion, according to a recent Federal Reserve report. Where is that trend going?
Unfortunately, it's going to continue to go up. It's up about 18% right now. And the problem is inflation is a lot to do with it because during COVID, people were putting away a lot of money. They were saving money. They had a lot of cash, and things were actually pretty good. But now, as we had continued inflation, they were spending all that money, and they're starting to deplete their deposits. And that's what's been happening. So the banks are actually seeing deposits go down. So they're doing that to pay mortgages, car payments, living expenses. So therein lies the problem. Something has to give. So where do they get the additional funds? Credit cards.
Yeah, and some of the new rates, 24%, 28%. Essentially, people, it seems like to me, someone who's not a financial planner, they're using that as an extra income source when, in fact, it's just more debt.
Absolutely. It is debt. It's a loan. It's a revolving credit. And the reason that the rates are so high is because most people don't know that when the Fed raises rates, we all know that commercial loans or business loan rates go up almost immediately. So do credit cards. These are adjustable rates. Fed's been raising rates for the past year, year and a half now. So credit cards are going to go up. The other thing, too, credit cards are unsecured. There's no collateral. So banks take significant risk in that. And especially in a bad economy, they're going to end up writing off a fair amount of that. So they charge a default premium.
Yeah, I was going to ask, should we see an expected rise in defaults as well?
Oh, yeah. Banks are already reserving for that.
And for President Lovell, you always bring great guests. First of all, thanks for that every month. You share great advice. Your guests always have wisdom that we don't have, you or I, and you're a president of a university, for Pete's sake. So why is it important for your faculty, for them to get out and share the wisdom, share the knowledge outside of the university?
You know, it's really important for us to think about the type of faculty that we have at the university. And one of the things that we really have focused on is bringing in faculty that have real-world practical experience. And Dr. Belasco is a perfect example. You know, we decided that we wanted to move into a banking program. We were the second in the country to do so. Only us in Texas A&M had this. And Dr. Belasco had all the practical experience of working in the bank industry and as a financial planner to help us develop the curriculum and deliver to our students so that they were getting experience the other students across the country were getting. Every student in our banking program has a job offer before graduation. And I will give my own daughter as an example. My daughter graduated from the banking program last year, and she decided that she either wanted to live in New York City or Chicago. And in October, this is October, for a May graduate, she had two job offers in New York and four in Chicago 7 months before she graduated. And it's because of the practical experience that she learned in this banking program that Dr. Belasco brought us.
Dr. Belasco mentioned financial literacy. You mentioned the fact that it's just two universities offer this. I'll ask you both. I'll start with you, President Lovell. Why is that?
Well, I think, you know, Kent has more detailed answer than that. But believe it or not, it has to do with the density of financial institutions in this part of the country. And, you know, as Ken will say, it's us in Texas, maybe the two most dense in terms of the banking industry, to have the headquarters here. And he may be able to answer that. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, there's 4,500 banks in the country. In the Midwest, where it's over 21% just concentrated in the Midwest. Actually, between Illinois and Wisconsin, there's 550 banks. So this is a great area for banks. Now, when you go around the country, even California is in the, I think, 120. New York.
So is it just because we like different kinds of banks, or what is that?
Illinois is the second largest in the country in terms of banks. And the reason for that is because they were a unit bank state for years, meaning they couldn't branch. So every bank had to, so anytime they opened a bank, it was done in Illinois, but they couldn't branch. So that was the reason. And unfortunately, too, during the financial crisis, that's why Illinois had some of the most failures, because we had a lot of banks.
Our guests are President Mike Lovell, Marquette University, and Dr. Kent Belasco, Director of Marquette's Commercial Banking Program, Associate Professor of Finance. So I was told that during your first commercial banking class, you used this quote from Jason Trenert, the CEO of Stratagas Securities. Modern banking has been the single greatest contributor to human progress. Why do you think that?
You know, I believe this, and once I saw that quote, I've kept it forefront in my program ever since then. And the main reason for that is because this is not how people think about banking. Most people think banks are out to just make money and to charge high rates. That's not the case. Banks are corporations, so they're accountable to their shareholders. But what they do is they create value, and they create value by making loans. And what loans are is not just cash. These are loans to businesses, which creates capital, and capital can grow. So it's like planting a seed. And that's when you get a startup. What they'll do is they'll create jobs. They'll create opportunity. People will start working. They'll pay more. The community will turn around, and so will the economy.
Do you think financial institutions have learned from the collapse of the late 2000s? Have they learned those lessons? Could we see a repeat of that?
I don't believe you'd see it at that magnitude, mainly because of the stress testing and the regulations that we have today. We have some pretty significant capital requirements, and that's the real problem behind that. And now with Silicon Valley recently, Michael Barr from the Federal Reserve is talking about raising capital rates again for banks, probably over $100 billion. So it's going to go up.
Do they do a good job of regulating banks in this country? Do we do a good job?
In general, I would say yes, from a safety and soundness standpoint. My biggest challenge with that is when I look at Silicon Valley, I think there were some fundamental things in there that were missed not only by the bank, but I don't know that the regulators provided the urgency on that. I don't.
Can you give me a specific on that or no?
Well, there was two things. One was the composition of deposits. So they were kind of putting all their eggs in one basket. And when you had a run on a bank like that, there's no coming back. The other side of it is banks invest in treasury securities. And that's what they did. When they needed liquidity, they had to go into their held-to-maturity securities, which they were planning to keep for a long time, and they were underwater. So they sold them at a loss. And that's going to affect their capital. There was no way to save them after that.
President Lovell, there's been this push in Marquette's business school to offer experiential learning. You have the O'Brien Hall, another new addition to the business program. Why are those hands-on experiences so important for your students at Marquette?
And I would go beyond just the business school. I would say at every part of the university, as we've talked, we try to give our students experiential learning. And so the first, O'Brien Hall offers the ability for us to give experiential learning in the classroom by the way it's the things are set up, the technology that's been used, the way we bring – and Ken is always bringing in people from the field in to talk to his students about issues. What is also really important, and again, this is a great example of that, is our students are getting internships in their field of study before they graduate. You know, my daughter Anna already mentioned she had three internships before she graduated, including at First Bank her last year, which gave her great – first of all, she was able to hit the ground running when she got into the field, but she also had insights on what she wanted to do in her career moving forward. And I think the more we can provide those students with those experiential, both in the classroom and outside the classroom, the more successful they're going to be.
Does that extend to the entire university, all of the programs, all the schools will all have sort of that connection to real life, real time?
Yeah, and if you have an arts and sciences student, we have an office that is solely focused on helping them get internships before they graduate.
All right, I always like to end with something fun. And it's summer, and I love summer. I'm a gardener. I grow things, and I love the warm weather. So let's start with Dr. Kent Belasco. What are you most looking forward to this summer in Milwaukee?
In Milwaukee is Summerfest. So that's going to be starting pretty quick. And actually, I'm meeting with one of the banks on my advisory board, BMO Harris. And so we're going to meet with them.
I was going to ask you. I forgot to ask you this question. The move to cashless.
Yeah.
Does that make it easier for people to get in these financial straits? I think it does.
Cashless, first of all, I don't know that it will ever totally happen. I think you're always going to have cash. But there's been movements, you know, that kind of started with COVID where you put it all on a card. So everything is on a card or it's on your mobile phone these days. The downside with that is it's still cash. So if you put it on your phone, it's going to be tied to a checking account. If you buy a card, you have to have the cash. Now, the people that it might help are the underbanked and unbanked people in the country. And that's a possibility because they don't necessarily have the wherewithal and the electronics to do this. And so a cashless society might be better in some regards.
That's going to be an interesting conversation as we go forward because so many places now going to cashless. All right, President Lovell, you can't say Summerfest.
No.
What's your summer thing?
No, I mean, I like going to the festivals. You know, as you know, Milwaukee, you know, crams a whole years worth of festivals in the 3 months. Italian Fest is probably my favorite one to go to. And so, but yeah, I'm a huge
believer. Are you
saying
that because I'm the host?
No. The food, the entertainment's really great.
A pleasure, both of you, Dr. Kent Belasco, Director of Marquette's Commercial Banking Program and Associate Professor of Finance on all things finance and banking. And, of course, President Mike Lovell. Have a fantastic summer to both of you. You've been listening, of course, to WTMJ.